61 years in the ministry of the gospel, and who, during much of that time, rendered outstanding service also to his alma mater. He was a frequent speaker on this campus from the early years of his ministry on. He spoke at the dedication of the original complex of buildings erected here in 1926. And then, as president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, he, of course, wielded much influence on the development and history of this school. He had a voice in the selection of two of its presidents who have been in charge of affairs here for a quarter of a century, and of no less than 70 faculty members. It's truly quite a bit of influence that he wielded. And now, as we bring these two lines of thought together, we do it under the shadow, as it were, of the two initial verses of the epistle. I read them this time from the Revised Standard Version. Working together with him, then, we entreat you not to accept the grace of God in vain. For he says, "At the acceptable time I have listened to you and helped you on the day of salvation. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." The theme suggests itself, ministry in the acceptable time. We begin with the past. Immediately before and after John Bainton's funeral, many remarks were made to the effect that this is the end of an era, the end of an age in the history of the Lutheran Church, particularly the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It seems to me that we might say that Dr. Bainton's ministry covered two ages. I know it's not easy, and in most cases not proper, to divide very neatly with 1 year and then begin a new era with the next. But I think, allowing for this limitation, we can say that one age of his ministry covered the years 1906, when he was ordained, to 1935, when he was elected president of the synod. And the second, from 1935 to 1967. When John Bainton was ordained, he was admitted to the clergy of the German Evangelical Lutheran Synod of Missouri, Ohio, and other states. And I think it's quite significant that the name change came much later. We can characterize the era with a German word, Gemütlich, also. I know it's in some ways an oversimplification, but as we read about those days, or as we who experienced them even though we were small children look back upon them, we recognize that we served a simple folk in a simple, direct ministry. There was not much affluence among the members of our churches, nor did we seek the affluent and influential people. Our ministry was largely to those of a German descent, especially in the rural areas of the country. And there were few among them who had even gone to high school, not to say anything about college. And as we look back now, it's interesting to see what the issues were. Bainton and a number of his friends were what we might call the Young Turks of that day. And they emphasized the fact that we would have to have more English services. English, not only in the English synod and in the English district, but in the German congregations, and that this hallowed hour of 10 o'clock on Sunday morning was not set aside merely for worship in Germany. They emphasized the fact that the Christian lay was outdated, and that it was time to begin to organize Sunday schools, and particularly to use this as a means of outreach. simplification, but I think it characterizes the age. And I'm using just this one aspect to paint the background in simple color. Because the point that I really want to make is that this was also the acceptable time. The men who served in those days, and Bacon among them, served these people with the gospel of the grace of God and proclaimed God's favor to all men. They did it to these simple people in a simple and direct way. And God blessed them in this way. And made that era a basis for many future developments whose roots lie back in the years of the German Evangelical Lutheran Synod of Missouri, Ohio, and other states. And then came the second year, the era of Bacon's presidency. It was quite different. The country had gone through a depression and was about to embark and be embroiled in World War II. And this was an era then of much activity. It was an era of expansion of missionary efforts, of parish education, of ministerial education, of secondary and higher education in our city. It was an expansion of publicity work, of use of the mass media. I might almost say, you name it, if it was a practical thing, we took it and expanded it. And if you say, yes, but much of the deplorable activism had its root in those days, I think you're right. But again, I would say that this age was used as an acceptable age, as an age for proclaiming the fact that God is still favorable to his people and that he would have all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. It was an era, too, in which, even though there was a certain tightening, doctrinally or theologically, nevertheless, and a beginning of openness was felt. For instance, in the exposition of the text that was used so frequently in those days, Romans chapter 16, verses 17 and 18, and in other respects. So this age laid the foundation for the age in which we are now. And it was in these two ages that Bacon had his ministry. In essence, he was a typical Missouri Synod ministry in quality outstanding. He was a tireless worker. I think we can say that the text from Ecclesiastes 9, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, applied to him. He was tireless in expending his energies for the cause of the church, of the synod which he loved and served. He was a man who loved people. And in many respects, I think he could be likened to Abraham Lincoln in that respect, in his love for the common people. He was a man who had a good sense of humor and enjoyed both hearing and telling Texas jokes. A strange combination, perhaps, of permissiveness and tenaciousness was evident in him. And I suppose, as the people of his day were at odds over whether he should have been permissive in one respect and tenacious in another, so historians of the future will also argue about it. But there's no doubt about it that he was a real leader. For 48 years, he held elective synodical office, and that without ever being a compromised candidate. So, the age and the church produced John Bacon, and he in turn had his influence on the church of his age. And that reminds us of the hymn that we sang before, each age its solemn past made plain but once. The ages of Bacon are past. We have now come into our age. And we ask ourselves, how will our descendants and the historians of the future judge us? And I say this not that this should influence our action, but that I hope it will mitigate our judgment of the past. And I hope also that as we judge our own age and ourselves, and as future generations do this, they will say of us that we recognized it as an age in which we still experience and we're conscious of the acceptable time. As an age in which we recognize that we are workers together with God. Because, you see, the question is not whether you and I are going to be used by God. The question is, are we going to be used as unconscious tools or as conscious partners? Are we going to be like Nebuchadnezzar or Caesar Augustus or Ho Chi Minh or perhaps H. Ralph Brown? Or will we be like Saul of Tarsus or Martin Luther or Martin Luther King, if you will, or John the 23rd or John Bainton or many others? That's the question that confronts us. And on this first day of the new quarter, and as we prepare to work through it, I trust that we will recognize that this is still the acceptable time, no less. It's still the new age. The power of God's new creation is still available. Every day in this eschatological period is filled with all the possibilities of the very last day, and every moment is pregnant with the potential of eternity. As we consider our ministry and the fact that we want to use this quarter to make ourselves more able ministers of the New Testament, I trust that we will recognize with Paul that our Lord has graciously given us a ministry of reconciliation in this